Hello, you're listening to the DJMCloud.com podcast with me, Dan McKeown. This is episode number 90, and it's being recorded on June 3rd, 2013. If you want to see more information, go to the website, DJMCloud.com. Look for the show notes to Podcast 90. And you can find links and stuff there.
Sheriff's office or the police. Fernando was basically a good kid.
Science.
Wait a minute.
To feel what? Now, the gang in Fernando's area had been bugging him to join for a couple of months. Other kids would think he was cool.
Maybe. Come on, man. You want to be one of the guys or what?
Well, Fernando said yes. He's a gang member now. Gangs fight with other groups. They think it's fun.
Let's go.
To become part of the gang, Fernando had to be jumped in. That means the gang made him prove how tough he was. He's a gang member now. Gang members use and sell drugs. To identify their territory, gangs write graffiti. They think it's fun.
It's enough. He's one of us now.
All right.
Even though Fernando didn't like the kinds of things his gang seemed to like, he went along with them.
Squirrel!
Here, let's make sure people know this is our turf.
You are cute.
Now, the gang liked to wreck things that other kids used to have fun. Fernando didn't really like to destroy property, but he was stuck with a gang.
Shut up!
He wanted to quit the gang.
I think I'm gonna quit one.
Do me a big favor.
It's no fun anymore.
It's no fun anymore. You can quit if you want, man. But we gotta jump you out.
What?
Yeah, it's just like jumping you in, except a lot worse.
Fuck.
Yeah,
fuck.
A lot worse. It's just like courting you in. But it hurts a lot more.
Austin, you shall remain here in juvenile hall until I can have transportation arranged for you to come to the state youth authority. Bailiff?
Yes, Your Honor. Please, Sam. Okay, let's go. Sweetly.
Eddie's decision to join the gang,
you know what it might be?
Sure didn't help him.
It's a joke! It's a fucking joke!
Say,
people, you know what it might be?
Okay, you are an alcoholic. You need pizza.
Armando, what's with the headband?
Nothing's with the headband. It looks cool, that's all.
Pretty soon, we're just all gonna be in FEMA camps.
Read an excerpt from Percy Bysshe Shelley. You can find a link in the show notes at djmcloud.com to the book that I'm reading from, The Complete Poetical Works of Percy Bysshe Shelley, on the Amazon Kindle store. I looked, and we were sailing pleasantly, swift as a cloud between the sea and sky. Beneath the rising moon seen far away, mountains of ice like sapphire piled on high, hemming the horizon round in silence lay, on the still waters these we did approach away. And swift and swifter grew the vessel's motion, so that a dizzy trance fell on my brain. Wild music woke me. We had passed the ocean, which girds the pole, nature's remotest reign. And we glowed fast o'er a pellucid plain of waters azure with the noontide day. Ethereal mountains shone around, a fane stood in the mist, girt by green isles which lay on the blue sunny deep, resplendent far away. It was a temple, such as mortal hand has never built, nor ecstasy, nor dream, reared in the cities of enchanted land. 'Twas like as heaven, ere yet day's purple stream ebbs o'er the western forest, while the gleam of the unrising moon among the clouds is gathering, when with many a golden beam the thronging constellations rush in crowds, paving with fire the sky and the marmoreal floods. Like what may be conceived of this vast dome, when from the depths which thought can seldom pierce, genius beholds its rise, his native home, girt by the deserts of the universe. Yet nor in painting's light, or mightier verse, or sculpture's marble language can invest, that shape to mortal sense such glooms immerse, that incommunicable sight and rest upon the laboring brain and overburdened beast. Winding among the lawny islands fair, whose blasmy forest starred the shadowy deep, the wingless boat passed where an ivory stair its fretwork in the crystal sea did steep. Encircling that vast fane's aerial heap, we disembarked, and through a portal wide we passed, whose roof of moonstone carved did keep a glimmering o'er the forms on every side, sculptures like life and thought, immovable, deep-eyed. You know, I have a camcorder that I got. It was purchased to record my wedding when Jessica and I were getting married in 2009. I wanted to have an HD video of the wedding. I looked into some wedding video services, and this was around the time when, some of them weren't even offering HD. So I had to improvise. I got my cousin Dennis to take the video. He did a great job. Set up a tripod and, he really got a good shot of the wedding. You know, did some zooming and panning and really, you know, gave us a good record of the ceremony, and then took some of the reception along with other people, and so that was cool and that worked for us. And then, you know, using that same camera and a Nikon DSLR, I just did a wedding video of my good friends Denise and Jamal, who got married down in Alabama recently. Jessica and I went to that, and that was very nice. And I had the honor of being their wedding videographer. And, you know, it's something I've done a few times, and I'm, you know, it's a cool thing to do for people if you can give them a couple angles. That's what I did with the DSLR. So I had a Nikon DSLR as well. And, you know, so I had the video camera set up on a tripod, and then I moved around the Nikon DSLR, got different angles. I wouldn't say the lighting was ideal for, you know, what I was trying to do, but it's a beautiful video and it worked well. And I did color correction in Final Cut Pro to, you know, try to, you know, have the video camera and the DSLR colors match better. You know, I mean, that you're going to have to deal with stuff like that when you're working with video, especially from different cameras. But I like the video camera. Like, of course, I'm always looking at the new technology, and there are some cameras on the market now that offer greater zoom, better low light performance. Very important that, you know, the low light performance be improved from where, you know, mine was. And, you know, even with mid-range kind of cameras like the one I have. So, you know, this camera, I like using it. It's a small camera, but it's compact. It's HD, and it is, you know, it's a Sony HDR XR 100, if I remember the model number right. It's, you know, so it's like a Handycam style camera that has a nice Carl Zeiss lens, and it takes 1080i HD. It's a quality tool, and when you have good daylight, I mean, it's okay indoors, well, in well lit situations. It can work in low light situations at times, but daytime outdoor shots, this camera excels. It's a great thing to take out somewhere, take videos, and, you know, I mean, you really gotta be careful though, because, like, as much as I enjoy videography, and I have since I was a kid, and I use those old, the cameras that have the VHS, the full-size VHS tape recording, as their storage media, and the advantage to those being, of course, you could just place the tape right into a typical VCR, you know, at the time when they were common, notably Charlie from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia actually uses this style of camcorder a lot of times with duct tape. But there's a guy in the neighborhood that was actually, you know, like, talking to me, like, confronted me about using, you know, video camera on my own property. Like we did that. I did that What's Going On in Cleveland video, and this guy, you know, decides to confront me. I mean, and this is the same guy that is, you know, like, I mean, he mistreats his dogs. They're always barking. So, you know, I have a dog, you know, barking sound in a lot of situations when I'm recording. And, you know, it just goes on, like, but there is a widespread kind of issue with using a camcorder with recording video. There were even people at a protest, at the Monsanto protest, that Jessica and I went to, and we talked about a couple podcasts ago, where she took really good pictures. It was in Cleveland, but there were actually protests against Monsanto. Like, they're all, you know, all over the country. But when we got video and photos of the Cleveland event, and I'm going around with the video camera, and even there, people are challenging me and telling me not to use it, not to video them. Like, you know, it's a public place, and, you know, I have every right to do that. But of course, there's a certain kind of attrition. Like, there's widespread misinformation about photographers and their rights on the part of a lot of non-photographers, on the part of a lot of regular people. And, you know, actually, it kind of goes back to the roots of this podcast. It was in podcast one when I discussed the right to photograph and video in public. And, you know, I guess so there's a certain kind of, interference with creativity that goes on in society, where people have not just unfounded beliefs, but wrong-headed beliefs. And there are people that want to tell stories, maybe true, maybe fictional, about the world around them, and they're using the video camera as a tool. And instead of appreciating the widespread use of technology for storytelling and other arts, people are against it. And, you know, it's just hard to understand why people, you know, just have that anti-creativity bias. And, you know, I guess they're just, you know, the there's all these attached cameras and, like with Google Glass, you know, very small cameras that people are going to be bringing around anyway. So this issue is going to have to be, you know, resolved, I think, somehow. So, recording and cameras are going to be everywhere, and, I mean, my PS Vita has a photo and video recording capability. I mean, I think that's really in there more for gaming, but still, you know, it's in an increasingly wide range of devices, and one of the devices I've noticed... that is, you know, that's moved into this new era is the Sony digital recording binoculars. I'm looking at this one on Amazon, the DEV-50V/B. It's like a $2,000 pair, and it looks like it says pre-order, so you know, must be the forthcoming model. But these are binoculars that have recording capability. It says as high as 25 time binocular magnification, a high contrast OLED finder for sharp images. You know, so these, I mean, you know, even binoculars have recording capability now. You know, that's kind of a cool thing. I wonder what those would really be like. It says 3D on it, but I don't know. I mean, if it had two lenses, I guess it would lend itself to that. So, you know, I haven't had binoculars in years, actually. Do I have like a gift pair? It's around somewhere. I don't even think I have any anymore. Like, but for years as a kid, I didn't have a good pair, but I had one of those folding binoculars. They would fold flat to about the size, around, say, the size of an iPhone 4S, maybe. Probably a little bulkier than that. And it would flatten out, so the lenses would turn and flatten into like a casing. And then when it was opened, that lens would pop out, so it would take on kind of a triangular shape, so like an A-frame kind of shape, because like a triangle on two sides and rectangle on two sides with a base as well. And so there would be little eye holes in the other side of it, and they would open up enough that you could see through it. So it would create a decent amount of magnification, but obviously they weren't that great. I used to use my grandpa's. My grandpa out in New Jersey, Grandpa Jimmy, he was a bird watcher. And so he would take me to this cool spot in the Meadowlands in New Jersey, at the Meadowlands Environmental Center. It had these kind of like a observation piers and a little building that kind of went out a little ways too, that was rounded at the end with like sort of for observation within the building. But my grandpa would like going there and then while looking at the different species of birds that would fly through the area. And that got me my probably my earliest start at consciously, you know, paying attention to birds. And I don't know if it was the wetland birds out around Golden Gate Park that kind of, you know, some of the egrets and stuff that kind of reminded me in a way, though, of some of the birds I saw when I was a kid out in New Jersey, you know, visiting my grandfather. And, you know, he and my grandma lived just west of the Meadowlands out there in Kearney. But just kind of north and just a little east of where they were, there's this, large stretch of wetlands. And it was near the Hackensack River, but actually the view is incredible. The facility is still there. I recommend if you're in North Jersey to check it out. And what happens is it's kind of a watershed of the Hackensack River, which in a way kind of divides the area of North Jersey that's near Jersey City and Union City from the area that is further west and includes Kearney and East Rutherford further north, and then to the south, just on the other side of another kind of canal or river, is Newark. So I used to experience the very urban feel of the area, walking around Kearney, hanging out with my cousins that live there, and my sister, and, you know, playing stickball and stuff. But like, there was also the there was a soccer culture for sure, you know. But there was also going out to this Meadowlands area. And there was a really cool kind of distance. It wasn't like you didn't know you weren't away, that you weren't near one of the biggest conurbations in the world. It was on all sides, but there was this kind of this kind of clear sanctuary where you could see off into the distance, and the wetlands continued for a while, and then way off in the distance was the city, and then off in the other distance was New Jersey. And in one of the directions there was this big hill, and I don't really even remember off the top of my head everything that my grandpa told me about the area, but you know, he talked about the history of the area and why there was a couple of kind of almost mountains on the one side in the distance, and that area, like having the binoculars there was cool to be able to see the birds. But I never became a hardcore birder. I love birds. I love watching wild birds and photographing them. I guess I'm more of a photographer than a bird watcher too. I like, like, those binoculars look cool, but I actually will go out with cameras, typically video cameras and still cameras. But I've seen the birder culture, on the internet. I've seen, a few people, doing that kind of stuff. But I find it, kind of fascinating and very, very peculiar. Well, I think it's peculiar in a way because people are doing a particular set of tasks around birds that is a very kind of hidebound set of traditions that, methodologies that are based on the number of birds, number of bird species that people spot. So there's this weight that people give toward, like, accounts that they have about how many birds they've seen, or the first time they see a bird, they have terms for it. I don't remember, but that's the thing, is there's a peculiar jargon and language around it, and like a lot of groups, but it seems to be a group that is really into like enforcing orthodoxy. And I gotta say, I don't know, like I think this was, I think of this before, like with my grandpa, who he lived to 75, but he died in 1993. You know, in his era, I don't know if there was that birder. I guess there may have been people around doing that, but I think like I think of him as a bird watcher, and I think there's a couple different there's a difference in those groups. And because my grandpa was just really interested in the birds and their habitat and, you know, their migration patterns, and he liked seeing different types of birds, but I would say, for example, he would focus on watching one, or passing me the binoculars, letting me watch one for a while and observing it, instead of just looking across again to see if he could see a different species right away, or go down into a notebook and try to keep track of it all the time. Like, I don't know if he wrote a lot of stuff down. I'm not really sure. I'm not saying he didn't write anything down or whatever, or, you know, take pictures, but he was really enjoying it, it seemed like, observing the birds. Because anyway, that's what I seem to think that I've, you know, that I learned from him. And yeah, that was, I mean, you know, I think like, you know, having pet birds is also something that I enjoy. And I think birds are definitely like, you know, there's a certain set of properties that generally most or all birds share. So observing my parakeets in my house is it's always fascinating. And what I've read, and you know, I mean, this is kind of there's a certain amount of subjectivity to this, but that, you know, pet birds are generally wild birds. They're just that they do pretty well in the conditions. There's chickens and there's animals that are pretty domesticated, but even they, there's a line, like if you've ever been to Maui, they're just wild chickens all over the place. Now there's not as many predators, so they're in greater numbers than they are in like the forests in the US. But for example, turkeys are native North American birds. Chickens are from Eurasia, I think, but they're from the old world, as it used to be called. There are some chickens in the forest, some wild chickens in the U.S., but there are a lot of wild turkeys, and that's the bird that is more natively adapted to the woods in America. This is the second half of Podcast 90. It's now June 4th, 2013, as I record. And I'm looking down at my two different iPhones. Well, now I have an iPhone 5. I'd had an iPhone 4S since right when they came out, and the subsidy for a new phone was just coming up, you know, just a little short of 2 years. So when the back glass of the iPhone 4S broke and it took a really hard fall, I went and got an iPhone 5. I managed to get the 4S repaired, though, so for now I have two iPhones. And I like having two of them. You know, one of them can serve as like a secondary iPhone because of the way cloud services are now. I can use Drafts to push to Evernote or Dropbox. I can use Byword or Nebulous Notes. But you're going to notice some differences. I guess maybe, is it an oversimplification to say the 4S has like a shiny screen and the 5 has a matte screen? It's a little bit different look, but it's very nice. Having the extra row of icons is cool, but on the 5. But also having the extra space, because the screen is a little bigger, it's taller, longer. So there are little black bars at the top and bottom of apps that were designed for iPhone 4S or earlier and haven't been updated. So last week I was talking about Arctic Keys and how much I like that app. And I do like it. I just realized that hasn't been updated for iPhone 5. So now that I look at it on my 5, it has those black bars in a place where, obviously, in a keyboard app, that kind of space is essential. And Sunriser XS is something to consider because they have updated for iPhone 5. Now, this is another one I think I've talked about before, but it's a cool app for composing simulated analog keyboard tracks, and it'll save them as WAV files. I'm not sure if it has a MIDI creating capability like the same way that Arctic Keys does, but I think they may have put in audio bus support, and that's the real buzzword I've heard about, you know, in the iOS audio space, and I think that's a cool thing. I want to learn more about using multiple apps and using the audio bus, because I'm not really, like, I have certain, you know, apps that I've used, basically GarageBand for iOS and the keyboard apps, and I haven't really used too many other ones other than light experimentation with a few. I mean, I've used the DJ app, but that's a little bit different. And so the Sunriser XS, you know, you can definitely make some cool classic house, techno kind of compositions. And, you know, the overall experience with the iPhone 5, I would say, is really good. I didn't rush to get a new one, although, you know, like I said, my subsidy just came up, so I didn't have much choice, really. But I think that there are, like, subtle improvements that you don't really notice until you've been using one. And I did get a nice case. It's like the cases have gotten better, too. You know, I want to experiment. Like at least the one, you know, like the ones at the Apple store. So this has a nice solid case with a black rim around the camera sensor. So hopefully that makes it able to take good photos and video. I want to do a side-by-side comparison with the photos and video with the two, you know, different devices, the iPhone 4 and, I mean, the iPhone 4S and the iPhone 5. But I do like the speed. And that's something I had noticed with lightly using Jessica's iPhone 5, because she got one already. And I think the quickness of it is nice. And when you're taking photos, it'll process them pretty much instantaneously, because the camera apps tend to be the same app. With the faster processor on the 5, it really works well to take photos quickly. And I'm gonna try to experiment a little more with the video capability, but I'm also excited about shooting video on the 4S, because it's easy to use that as a secondary device, do things like shoot video with it.
We begin with Gordon Gee, president of The Ohio State University. In candid remarks, recorded remarks, there is an audio tape. There always seems to be one now. Remarks in December at the university's athletic council and first reported by the Associated Press. Gee took aim at any number of constituencies. The biggest headlines have splashed over Gee's remarks about Notre Dame and Roman Catholics. When Gee discussed his earlier negotiations with Notre Dame about possible Big Ten membership in the 1990s.
Fuck! First of all, they're not very good partners. I'll just say that. I negotiated with them during my first term, and the fathers are holy on Sunday, and they're holy hell on the rest of the week. And, you just can't trust those damn Catholics on a Thursday or Friday.
He also discussed the Southeastern Conference and responded to a question that referenced SEC fans making light of the Big Ten's inability to count now that the Big Ten has 14 members.
Well, you tell the SEC when they can learn to read and write, then they can figure out what we're doing.
And having remarked about SEC reading and writing, Gee also then talked for the Big Ten only admitting universities of the caliber and integrity of the current Big Ten membership, and he named names.
The institutions are very clear that their number one criteria is to make certain that we have institutions of like-minded academic integrity. So you won't see us adding Louisville. That was a negative statement. Or the University of Kentucky.
No! Now, Gee has apologized to Notre Dame. The school has accepted his apology. Gee has apologized at
Stop.
Law. He's undergoing what the...
I don't care!
Remediation plan.
I don't care!
I don't know.
I don't care! What the hell is going on? My God in heaven.
...accumulated over the years. In the middle of Ohio State's NCAA football violations passage, a chapter which eventually led to the firing of head coach Jim Tressel, Gee reinforced every stereotype about the importance of big football with this flippant remark.
Did the thought of dismissal ever cross your mind in this case?
No, are you kidding? Let me just be very clear. I'm just hopeful the coach just doesn't dismiss me.
Now, 17 months ago, Gee was dismissed.
No.
Well, Gordon Gee of OSU has now quit after talking all that shit.
That's what you get.
Well, our clock has turned over one more time, and the date is now June 5th, 2013, as the podcast has kind of been divided into thirds now, and we're entering the final third. RSS Reader News. Feedly has announced a roadmap, including word on their Normandy project. Now, Feedly is a cloud RSS app, and they have apps for the Chrome browser, also for iOS, and, you know, mobile platforms. But what they've announced is that they're going to allow other apps to use their data backend. So apps like Reader, which is popular on iOS, and Press, which is on Android, are going to be able to sync to people's Feedly accounts the way that they previously had been syncing to the now shuttering Google Reader.
Hey everyone, my name is Teray Holmes, and I'm the author of the book love lessons for single happy girls and their not-so-happy friends.
Okay.
And our fitness book for the girl in her 30s who finds herself single, maybe without a husband, without children, maybe never married. Also for the woman who may be divorced and maybe she has children. But this book has so many great love lessons because in our 30s, there's so much that we can learn or so many lessons that we've gone through, so many things that we've gone through. And so the love lessons are also very applicable to the young woman in her 20s as well.
Because let's do it.
I've learned as a 39-year-old woman, there's so many things I could share with a young woman who's in her 20s so that maybe she doesn't make the same mistakes that I've made along the way. This book is a book that is absolutely a fantastic read. And I'm not just saying it because I wrote it either. It's really a great book.
Sure.
I'm asking for $12,000 to fund my Kickstarter campaign. That $12,000 will go towards me self-publishing the book. Yes. I am self-publishing my book, and I'm really excited about it.
No.
And I need your help. So it'll go towards the self-publishing of this book.
You listening?
As well as giving the rewards, the wonderful rewards that I have for you guys on the
podcast.
So you can donate and give a very small donation, or you can buy a book, one book, or you can even buy the book in bulk and give it to family members and friends and colleagues and coworkers and nieces and aunts and all that great stuff. So you can buy a set of four, or you can buy a bulk of eight. The choice
is yours. That's a strange thing to do.
For you guys who are watching, you can even contribute to the campaign.
You can gift
your book to someone. You can gift it to a niece or a daughter.
Absolutely not.
Or your coworker or your neighbor or a friend, or you can even gift it to your girlfriend.
No.
There are some really great love lessons in there as well.
Stop.
Well, not only, I believe, help her to become a better woman for herself, but to help her become a better woman for you as well. So
I'll tell you what you need, a good antipsychotic.
Here's the deal, Kickstarter. I have 30 days to raise this money. If I don't meet my goal in 30 days of $12,000, I don't get any money.
Okay?
So I need your help. I need you to tell me about it. Your Facebook friends, your Twitter, your LinkedIn, your email, call folks up, get on the telephone, and just really tell people about love lessons. I know this is a great project, and I know
absolutely not.
Me, we're going to see some major success here. So, make your contribution, spread the love, spread the lessons, spread the word. I'm Teray Holmes, author of the book, Love Lessons for Single Happy Girls, and Happy Friends.
I thought I was in the labyrinth. And, oh my god, this, like, just so many weird things, like, it was like I was in a dream. Like, this is what I'm talking about. You can't separate your thoughts from reality. Any weird thought that comes in your brain, whether it's from a song or a movie or something that happened to you, you just, like, blow it out of, that you blew out of proportion. You think that's real. Or I thought it was real. So I was, like, climbing up this. I found my diploma from college. And I ripped it into a tiny little pieces. So I don't have my diploma anymore because I destroyed it. Basically anything in my room that I could destroy, I destroyed. I broke things, I tore clothes, I poured things out of their bottle.
You've been so good, I'm gonna give you a treat.
This one is pretty crazy. I took lipstick and wrote things on the wall with the lipstick. I wrote, like, things like, such and such is a whore, such and such is the devil. And, like, just any weird thing. I can't emphasize this enough. Like, any thing that I had been thinking about for the past year or something was fair game.
No, it's not.
Yeah. And I almost ripped my laptop in half.
sometimes when you look on sites like YouTube, you find perspectives on seemingly familiar but actually quite different experiences that they have with different kinds of brands. So when you look at how the South Africans, at least on YouTube, Anton Taylor is this video that I'm going to play a clip of. He's reacting to the move Burger King is apparently making into South Africa. You know, I guess, not knowing much about it, I wonder if it's African sourced ingredients or not. And you know, like I it would be, so I don't know, like the branding to me, while they're gonna have recipes and they're gonna have certain rules or standards, they're gonna have a certain image and marketing in common, you're looking at a brand that is probably putting a pretty different product on the table. Well, I mean, you know, I've had Burger King in the Netherlands, and I guess it is pretty similar, but it's certainly different in that, you know, in Europe they're going to have European beef and potatoes, generally speaking, in the fast food places. You know, both due to the logic of sourcing the food in a relatively local fashion, but also I think there's rules and standards that they have to follow that make it much more sensible to use food raised and grown inside the borders. So let's see what the South African with the video here has to say about Burger King in his country.
So you may have heard that Burger King's arrived on South African shores, and there's been quite a bit of hysteria about it, and there have been pretty insane queues going on for almost 3 weeks now. Now, personally,
you know, it's a strange
thing. I cannot comprehend why somebody would do this, but you know, to each their own. So we thought perhaps it's best to see what it's all about. Maybe the sauce is cut with MSG and meth. So my mate Grant and I popped down one cuck miserable Saturday morning to check it out.
We've just arrived at Burger King. It's a Saturday morning. Oh my God.
Jesus.
So, just to clarify, the time's about, it's 10:15, and it's over 2 weeks since Burger King opened. Look at this. I might add it, if you can't
there's see, a really long line in the video.
It's miserable.
Since we first stepped into the queue.
What?
And now we've got the burger that we came for. Grant does have a rugby game in about an hour, so
it's carb alerting.
We'll end up on the sidelines.
I don't know if it's an hour worth of my life.
Yeah. Now, initially, I didn't want to be too harsh on people queuing to Burger King. See, there's a lot of you. But also, you know, I understand that it's an experience, there's a lot of excitement and hype, and I've been lucky enough to travel abroad and taste Burger King before, but I realize that this isn't a luxury available to all. However, what really pissed me off is that no one wanted to be interviewed when we queued, so fuck you all. And secondly, there were queues longer for Burger King than I've seen at municipal voting stations. And when people are more keen to get an American burger than they are to vote in their own election, well, then that's pretty fucking pathetic.
United
States. Now,
I've wasted time on... So, there's this very, like, strong perspective about Burger King, both in the people waiting in lines, and then this guy who, well, kind of waits in line and then kind of reacts against it, or something. So, I just think, that, you know, if there were a line that long for Burger King,
off chance that they stop taking pictures of the Burger King sign and raise their noses from the sweet smell of polyunsaturated fats aren't really going to enrich your lives. The fact of the matter is that it's pathetic that South Africans are doing this. I would understand if this was some revolutionary new medication or vaccine never before available in South Africa, or even furniture.
So, you know, anyway, there's a... There he is. It goes on like that, and it's a burger. So, yeah. And Burger King is actually kind of it's been around in America forever. Obviously, it's all over the place, and I don't know, like. I think their branding kind of needs a new image in the U.S. I guess they have like a brand that's surprisingly powerful abroad, even if they're lagging a lot of other fast food places in the U.S. I mean, they're certainly nowhere near as big as McDonald's, and they definitely aren't they're not in the fast growing category like Chipotle or Smashburger or a place like that. They're not in the hip category like the is the frozen yogurt thing hip, or is that just Pinkberry?